So a couple of weeks ago, I had a friend of mine contact me, and he wrote a book, a couple of books, and he claimed that he was channeling. And, you know, some of the things in the books sounded like some information that I would accept. And then other stuff, it's like, I never quite heard it put that way before. But who knows? The truth is in all things. So Joy has been wanting to do a show with me every month. And I thought maybe we can talk about that amongst many other things. So my sweet sister Joy is with us right now. Hi, Joy.
Hi, TJ. It's great to be here and be back hanging with you, you know?
Yeah.
And getting to that, you know?
Absolutely. So Larry, my friend Larry, and I'm sure he doesn't mind me using his name, he's seen spirits and stuff like that most of his life, and it freaked him out for a long time, but now he feels like he has better communication with them. And so he has written a book that was channeled through his spirit guides, he claims. Talks about what ghosts are and how they can move on to the next thing, whatever. And I just wanted to get your take on that, because there's a lot of people now maybe that are starting to realize some things as we all become more aware, right? Are we going to have more psychic contact or develop these skills more?
So it's interesting. I tend to use the term being connected, okay? And the reason I do that is because I want to acknowledge the existence of light in all things, and to acknowledge how we all came from the same place and that there's divinity in all of us. So when people say that they're psychic, I see that as an expression of part of a neighborhood. It's not anything I say, I don't mean anything is greater than or less than. I feel the psychic arena is a neighborhood that gives access to certain truths. A lot of times people that are called psychic are considered mediums. I see all those things as different kind of neighborhoods linked to the source point. And as a channel, we can access those different neighborhoods. I just wanted to put that out to people first so you have an understanding of where I'm speaking from, because we're all connected, we're all equal, and we all have the ability to tap in to connecting with spirit, and recognizing that our spirit guides are actually a part of our own consciousness, because everything comes from the same place. And if it's rooted in love and light, and truth, it's going to bring through truth. And if it's rooted in fear, it's going to bring through illusion or ego or disruption. I just wanted to bring that out first, okay?
Well, that already answers my question, but please go ahead.
Well, you know, there, I like to say from that place of source, we're able to access information, and sometimes things will come through before people ask the question, because they, you know, the questions are anticipated and seen from that place. So, but it's when you're in communion with the divine, you're in a state of union with the divine, that tends to happen freely. So, I want to backtrack and give you a chance to ask actual questions so people can, who are listening, may have their answers given to them too.
Everybody has the ability to channel, correct?
Yes.
And
we all are channels. We all already are.
And the only thing is, maybe we don't completely trust things that pop into our mind, do we?
Well, channeling isn't from the mind. It's from, if you think of it like this, we all have spirit bodies. We have four bodies: the physical, the emotional, the intellectual, and the spiritual. And all these four bodies have subtle bodies and different things, but channeling doesn't occur from the mind. It occurs more from the spiritual consciousness place, the direct link. You know how we all have seven chakras in the body, right?
Right. Yes.
Yeah?
Yep.
Okay. So we also have five, at least five, if not more, in the spirit body, outside of the spirit, outside of the body. And when we're channeling, it's the higher chakras that are open. If we're working as, like, let's say a conscious channel that is committed to bringing through high truths, those five chakras and the chakra at the crown, the third eye, the throat, and the heart are very active during those times. So it's coming from the spirit bodies, the channeling.
And so somebody that has the ability to channel clearly, more clearly than perhaps others, has their chakras open and connecting with their spirit body. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, those chakras are open and they're actually spinning in specific directions that support mastery. And the other thing, they can bring through channeled information without having full use of the bottom chakras, okay? But when the bottom chakras, like the power chakra, the sacral, the root, are open and active and spinning, they're more present. They're more grounded. And this engenders safety for people they work with. There's more presence for that person.
When you say safety, safety from what?
Well, when people come for a session, right, it's not even from what. It's that the person that comes for a session actually feels the full presence of the channel or facilitator or teacher that's working with them when they're grounded and present for that person. So they're more inclined to open emotionally, to trust deeper from the soul level, because their soul sense like this energetic presence from that person that they can handle a deeper level of things.
Okay. So, you know, things like a Ouija board, do they serve any purpose?
So, it's a very interesting thing you bring that up. But then you do bring up great questions and things. If you should do this for a living.
I think so.
I think
you
should.
Yeah, interesting.
Yes. So the thing to remember and in my knowing is it's not the tools or the equipment. It's the facilitator using them, the intention that they have. So if there's somebody that's looking at a Ouija board as a board game, right? And all of a sudden they have something come through and it's disruptive and whatever, you know. It's because it's not being directed with pure intent. It's being taken lightly. If you have somebody who's working with a Ouija board or a pendulum or a crystal ball, and they are, you know, their heart and soul is very committed to being of service and working with the light and staying in integrity and working from heart directly, what comes through is actually going to come from a very high place. That includes when automatic writing happens and that kind of thing. Before I actively started, I have to smile. There's a beautiful cardinal right outside my window. Yeah, and cardinals are symbolic of the fairies, and they have, for me personally, they remind me of twin flames. But anyway, sorry about that. I got off
track.
No,
that's fine. That's part of it. That cardinal is there for a reason right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we have to figure out what that is. Your twin flame is coming in. Hang on. He's here right now. Come in.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. No, I have to laugh because I had met mine and I doubted who he was. And every time I doubted who he was, the cardinals came flocking to my house. Crazy. But anyway, I want to tell you that intention and pure intent is 98% of anything with this work. Like, if you're going in with a pure intent and you're utilizing tools that are there, including automatic writing, you're going to bring through very high vibrational information. The other thing, I can remember when my brother and I, my brother, he made transition. He flies around now wearing a long white robe, smoking a cigarette. He cracks me up. But anyway, when he was in a human body, he was one of the first that I read for, and it came through in automatic writing first. And I didn't find this out until after his death, but apparently that was very profound and very accurate for him, to the point that when he was alive, he would go and profess things about that to people. It never occurred to me in my heart to bring through anything less than the divine, you know? And I think that peace and that connection is why that affected him so, you know, it gave him what he needed that way. So I've used different things at different times personally. At this point, I do more conscious channeling than anything, or I do soul coaching, which brings through info naturally. But I've used other things and found there have been accuracy with them.
So, really, is there, you know, you say it's the intention of the person, but are there beings, and I know you don't really go there with this, but are there beings out there that kind of like to mess with you, or can you, you know, can you bring in something that maybe you don't want to bring in when you work with those things? Even if you don't have the intentions, I've listened to a lot of people tell me different things about it. Some people have had pleasant experience and talked to a surfer that might have died in the 60s, one lady told me, with her friend. And then other people had some really bad experiences. communicating with something else, and this thing messed with him. So how do you look at all that?
Like I said, I feel if something is fear-based, you're going to draw that in. See, that person who does that, I've met my share of people that felt like their intention was off or something like that. And, you know, rather than go into that place of like, oh, they're bad or evil, I see that they're maturing in their spiritual evolution. And they may not have quite come to the full understanding of knowing how to proclaim that the light and the love and the direct link of source is what the commitment is linked to. They may be maturing into that. Unless somebody is purposely using something for like selfish gain. I understand there are people that are caught up in materialism because they haven't grown beyond that. They're stuck, you know? And when people draw in what others call the darker stuff, that's where the stuck energy is. And generally behind that, there's a wound that has festered someplace unconsciously that they may not have healed, that allows an opening to magnetize that kind of stuff in. See, people have the right to choose if they're going to heal or not, how far they're going to grow. So if they're making a choice unconsciously even to stay stuck, they're going to magnetize the illusionary stuff to them, what people call darker, denser energies, because that exists in their realm. And there are things they need to learn from that, to go in and let go of the fear of healing and embracing the light on that level. Does that make sense?
I believe that that makes some sense. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That is very good. Thank you very much for explaining that.
Clearly. Sure.
Moving on, talking about the third dimension. We've talked about this again and again and again, third dimension and fifth dimension. But you and I had a conversation before we started, and I like the way you broke it down. Do you remember what you said? Maybe not exactly, as far as those that are getting ready to step into this fifth dimension. It's we're already there. You've said time and again, the earth is already there. Mm-hmm. So what we're seeing now is still a 3D illusion. It's like there's two different places.
Well, you know, I've heard it said that during these times, it would be as if two worlds were coexisting. And in understanding that, the world that you feed is the one that grows. So I think you like the analogy of the garden, right?
Yes, because I use that Miracle-Gro all the time. Yeah. I have 16-foot flowers. I'm just kidding.
I know. But so, TJ, we have to keep up with him, you know? So anyway, the garden analogy is, let's say you look at a garden and it's got flowers, it's got weeds, it's got animals, it's the sun shines on it. We didn't even get into that, you know. But what happens is all these different people are around, and one person goes and they see the weeds and they're trying to pull the weeds out and they're getting frustrated and the weeds keep growing back, and to them, you know, it's kind of like a hell. And then you see the people that come in and go, wow, look at these weeds. These are herbs. These can be used as medicine. This is my heaven, part of my heaven. And then there are people that'll come and they'll look at the flowers and they'll be in awe of the beauty of them, and they'll nurture them, and they'll notice how the sun is shining and helping them bloom. And, you know, some will even bloom in the darkness of the moon's light, you know, or the light of the moon, right? And then there are others that'll stand there and they'll see animals like going and eating them and chomping on them, and they'll get frustrated and they'll feel like nature is a big pain, you know. So here's the thing. It's the same garden. It's all about how we perceive it. It's the thing, that term I've heard. It was so funny. Years ago, I was going to all these ascension workshops and groups and all this, and I was channeling it then because, you know, I came in channeling, but I remember this one day I was in a mall, and all of a sudden I had this sense, ascension is a shift in consciousness. And that garden, like that analogy, that the people, how they treat that garden, if they shift their perception to the fact that there are healing herbs there in the middle of the weeds, that even in the dark night, that there are flowers bloom under the moon's light, you know? There's so much there in life that is heaven. That is part of the ascension energy that we're meant to live. And it's linked to how we see it, how we perceive it, what we nurture.
And so would you say that even though we're allowed to make free will choices for eternity, if we choose, we're gently being nudged all the time?
So that whole thing, I like to say this, you know, Source called all souls home. See, there was something called the free will experiment, where Source, and this is what I'm sharing with you, these are truths or things that, you know, for me, that I uncovered. And some people may take them and some people may not. That's fine. I'm just going to share what, you know, what's come to me. But so we had this free will experiment where God chose to experience itself in countless forms. And so we all kind of, our soul is where that aspect of the source is. And what happened is this free will experiment, you know, there was an arena that chose to forget its divinity. And from there, the atrocities of war and evil, what people call evil behavior, it originated from there. It was in the forgetting state. Like some people have all this thing about a devil. I like to say what people perceive of as quote unquote a devil is it's an aspect of consciousness that has forgotten its own divinity, or it wouldn't be acting that way. So here's the thing. What's happened, the free will experiment ended in a time-based continuum. I believe I might be a year or two off in the 3D realm. I think it was in 1994. And at that point, Source called all souls home. And I like to say, so who do you think is going to win that argument? You know? If Source is calling everything back to itself, do you really think anyone's left out of the equation in some way?
Well, there's a few of the stragglers. I'm just kidding. No, I don't believe that.
I don't either. And the thing is, some people may fight it. Some people may not be in the awakened state. Some people may be waking up to that call slowly. And some people might be embodying it and running around and trying to wake people up, because at that point, you're in union with the divine. So your will and the will of Source are one, because you're expressing spirit and form. So at that point, what you want is the world to wake up. So you're not living in a state of separation. And again, it goes back to an understanding that ascension is a shift in perception. Because as soon as a person wakes up, their perception changes. They may think, oh, I can go back and do 3D, but it never fulfills. They'll consistently work to stay in the memory then. Hello?
Yes, hello. You've reached a number that's no longer connected. Kidding. So where do you think that you see yourself in all of this right now? You personally.
Oh, personally, I hate that question.
Well, I mean, you say that we need to live in that and act as if we already are, but you and I are talking in a third dimensional phone line, so we're still here right now, at least part of us.
So we're in bodies, but remember, spirit in form doesn't mean a separation from body and form and spirit. It's one, right? So what we're looking at doing is acknowledging that the body is truly a temple. Fifth dimensional temple. And the more we feed at that, the more that reality, the more we live it, right? Remember the garden? If we feed it, we live it.
Mm-hmm. But where are you in all of this? Where are you?
Okay. So I, it's a very funny thing. I have, oh God, TJ.
Let her out. Go ahead.
All right. I don't feel it's a simple answer, but I'm going to attempt to give it to you. So I was, and when I share this, I don't mean it like I'm the only one, because it's, like I said, we're all channels. So when I was born, I came in as a conscious channel for Christ from early on and was involved in healing work and spontaneously channeling Christ until I was 33, and then had an expansion happen, and still do channel Christ once in a while, but studied all this shamanic work and stuff like that. And where I'm at in everything at this point in my life is striving to consistently and intentionally live the things that I share with people. It's not like I never have things that come to me to master, but my approach and my intention is to embody 5D as much as possible and to take everyone with me however I can. In congruency with oneness and light, order, truth, union. and get the message out there, share with people, you know.
Do you, because here's what I noticed, because I think things are, you know, I've heard so many different things, so you kind of wonder a little bit about all of it, but I feel in order to ascend, we have to let go of anything that's we're holding on to, as far as emotions, as far as the past, as far as things that don't serve us. One, we have to let go. And I think two, another thing that we have to do is balance. And we've got to hold the vibration of love as much as we can at every moment. That's what we are. So I feel like I'm being shown this again and again. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. It is. The key is the balance between the heart and the mind. And, you know, there's the yin and the yang points. It's like getting that, staying in balance with living spirit and form. You have to stay in balance with that, you know. It's kind of like in your experience. Well, TJ, where are you with all this besides the balance pieces? Yeah.
Where am
How
I?
Do you feel?
How do I feel about what? Fifth dimension? Where am
yeah.
I? Where am I at
do
with
you
it?
Do you feel there are times you're living it?
Well, I can't see it with my eyes if it's happening, but I can feel it in my heart when I'm filled with joy or filled with bliss, and I try to put myself, I don't have to try, but I just remind myself and think about what gives me that joy, and it can be the simplest little things. So I feel it just, we connect more with God when we just focus more on love. We connect more with Source, and I don't know, have the formula to get to this fifth dimension. I know you've told me again and again, you just have to act as if you're there, but I feel like I'm being prepared with every encounter that I have. And you know me, I love to talk to people and I love to hear their stories and I like to listen and I have love for others. And it's through so much, sometimes through their stories, that I gain insight and wisdom. And it's always, okay, I think I moved on to the next level, Joy. I think I'm finally going to be ready. And then something happens and it's like, man, you know what?
See, the thing is, though, that thing that happens, it's not meant to draw you into 3D. It's meant to show you the next step of mastering this fifth dimensional lesson. Remember that. Because in truth, you're an awakened soul, TJ. You don't do things from a place of unconsciousness. You do not live that way. The acknowledgement of light and love is foundational in your world. And with that as your foundation, that right there is the frequency that lifts you and continuously calls you into 5D to live the knowing of that. See, it's not even acting as if, it's recognizing you're already embodying the foundation of it in you. You're already there.
And would you say,
and one of the things you do, in my experience in watching and listening to you, is you may draw people in that are like, when you came to me with the issue of what do people look for and that kind of thing. You're somebody who's working to shine a light in the places that may appear dark and to bring truth in, because that is 5D work. That's not third dimensional work. The third dimension doesn't even consider the concerns you have. Hello?
I'm sorry, you've run out of time. Please deposit another quarter.
Look, I understand you need a joke to stay humble. I get it. But did you let that in?
Yes, I did.
Good. So pleased. We were pleased.
And it makes sense. And it certainly makes some sense. It's just, you know, you deal with stuff every day. You know, and with my job and with other things, it's sometimes you're go. And I'm always in a good mood, and I always see when things happen. I may not always see it right in that moment, but usually in that moment, I see that this is a great opportunity to, again, practice love, because that's what I think is the most important thing. So, for example, we've had quite the run of ladybugs, these Asian ladybugs in the house. And my wife is hell-bent on squeezing them with a napkin and throwing them in the garbage. Now, if she didn't, they'd be all over the place. But we could absorb them with a vacuum. And then something came to me and said, treat everything with love. This is why this is happening. And so what I've been doing lately, and I haven't told her, is I've been catching them and releasing them outside. And they're probably getting right back in. But I've been catching them and thinking, I don't know if this is going to stop them from coming in, but everything has to be valued as much as possible.
So I have this thing I do that may be helpful. Occasionally I'll have like spiders come in or stuff, and I'll make a proclamation to the spiders in my house, and I'll say, listen, you can't live here. You're not paying rent. This is what I say to them. And I'll say, you go outside. Go outside and play. I won't kill you out there. And no freaking lie, I rarely find a spider. And yet right outside my front door, there are webs. They look like a horror flick. And I leave them alone because I made an agreement with them.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if you speak to them say to them, go live in a tree somewhere down the alley or something.
Yeah, there's no alleys where I live. I'm out in the country pretty much. But maybe they could go find one of my other sheds or garage, and I wouldn't care if they're in there. But the thing is, in the winter, they need a warmer place. So I think they find their ways into the walls of the house somehow through the siding. And then when it gets warmer out, they go, we got to find our way out. And then they find their way in, you know, and they start popping up all over the place. And this year, it seems like it's been a lot worse. And I just, you know, the thought hit me, well, maybe it's time to really focus more on love and stay on that. You know, these little buggers, little beings are reminding me that I can have patience and love. And I see it all the time. I get this lesson, it seems like, all the time. And usually I'm in a good state where it doesn't bother me. But once in a while, these little buggers give me a napkin. And I squish them. Bless their soul. Return back to the Creator now. Here you go. I'm just helping them. You said we're called back to the Creator. No, I'm kidding. I try to respect all life. But sometimes, you know how it is. If you got like flies or whatever, are you going to escort the fly outside?
Personally? I had a couple of years ago, it was weird. I had all of a sudden I have flies in my house and I didn't know how. And I'm trying to think, I used some natural thing to repel them. Like, I went and I found there was a certain herb that repelled them, and I laid that on all of my vents, and it stopped.
Hmm.
So I try things like that. And I mean, I also, I have had exterminator come in with some things, like once or twice. And, you know, I also, see, I live in a massive house and I have a landlord that's so cool. He likes me to call him the upstairs neighbor, and, he's great. He's great. It's like my house is like my house, but his approach to extermination is different than mine. I do my thing. He does his things, but I've seen both sides, you know. I have killed bugs. I don't like doing it, but I will, and I have, you know. And then after I do it, I'm like, go to Nirvana, you know. That's the thing, like you. I have the same approach, you know.
Take your little bug soul and go to the bug light. Take your little bug soul.
Well, see, that's when I'll stand and I'll say to them, if you leave, I'm not going to kill you. I'm not.
I've done that too. I've done that. I did actually say that with the ladybugs. Okay, I'm going to let you guys outside. I don't know if I said it verbally, though. Maybe I need to do that. I'm going to let you outside, but you guys have to make an agreement to stay out there. And this is the this is not the typical ladybug. These are the Asian ladybugs that were released in this country years ago, and they become like a plague because the little... The little ladybugs, they don't bother you, and there's not that many that would come in. But these little buggers get in. They find a way to get in. I don't know how, and I've been asking, how are they getting in? And I haven't figured that out yet. And so if I could at least figure that out, then maybe I could block off those areas and keep them from... They can live in the walls, and I'm not worried about that. It's just when they decide to pop out, and they're in the living room and in the kitchen. Thank goodness they're not in the bedrooms. So that hasn't been an issue. So whatever the case, it's teaching me. It's always teaching me. Then it wasn't long ago I had a mouse in the wall, in the bathroom wall. Mm-hmm. Now, what would you do if you had a mouse in your home? Would that freak you out?
I had a couple of situations with mice, and I did talk to them. And then the landlord got the exterminator in.
And that was
things have been quiet. So they've been quiet.
So I was getting up for work.
And wait.
Go ahead.
One other thing. I have this thing I do. I have a couple of things I do. One of them, I feed the fairies honey. If not every day, I try at least once a week. And I swear, outside of hearing them, like, occasionally, and I know it's them, things stay quiet. And the other thing, I have, like, loads of crystals in my house because I teach crystal classes, and I have somebody I'm training in, we're regridding all the crop circles on the planet. So I have all these crystal maps all over my house. And I really feel like when you do things that are really energetically, like, congruent with the light and that kind of thing, it really helps to keep balance in your life in other ways, you know. So these maps are here, and I have this one African, it's a generator, it's an African quartz generator, and it's in the breezeway, and it's programmed to only bring in positive energies. So if you have any crystals in the house, why don't you try that too?
Okay. I don't have any, but maybe I can get some of those. So...
yeah. Now I feel like I want to send a truck over to your house, you know?
So my little buddy, the mouse, he's in the wall.
Wait a minute. Let me tell you. Get selenite and black tourmaline. Put in like a little piece. Hold the selenite and the black tourmaline together in your hand. And thank the selenite for keeping the black tourmaline clear. And thank the black tourmaline for repelling things that you don't want in your house. Put them over top of all the windows and the doorways in your home, including the basements. Try that out. See if that helps.
Well, they rarely get in. But, I mean, it's something to keep in mind. I just felt this one got in for whatever reason, probably, again, to get me back on a, you know, I have love for all, but sometimes maybe mm-hmm. I lose sight of that, even for the smallest mm-hmm. of things. So to me, this is part of that lesson, to love everything. So the dilemma I was faced with, I hear this rattling like in the wall. There's probably a few of them in there, you know. And I'm thinking, mm-hmm. how am I going to get them out? And my wife is going to freak out when she wakes up. So I even told her before I went to work, we've got some visitors in the wall. Don't be freaked out. So she wouldn't even go in the bathroom. So I went upstairs into the attic, and I thought, well, maybe they can smell if I put some peanut butter on a trap and get them to go into that. And then I thought, you know what? I can go in the bathroom. And you know where you have the toilet paper roll? It's usually on something that's built into the wall. So that you take the toilet paper roll off, and there's a little metal frame or whatever that allows the toilet paper to roll, and it's cut right into the wall. So I thought, well, I can get a look in the wall, and I bought this natural spray that was going to just make them leave, you know? And if mm-hmm. they left the wall and went back in the attic, I'd be fine with that. And so I take that two screws out, and I pull that little cover that holds the toilet paper roll in it, and I pull it out, and I start spraying. I can see right in the side of the wall there. You can see everything, the partitions and whatever. Then as I start putting the cover back on, this little head pops out. This little head pops out at me, and he's looking at me, and he's trying to get out. And I'm thinking, you're not going to get inside the house here. So I push it, and I didn't hurt him. I pushed him back in. I start putting the screw, one of the screws in. Well, the other hole, I could see his little beady eye looking at me. He's trying to. So maybe he was meant to bring me some laughter too, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then I thought about, you know, what could I have done to get him out of there? And I have built a humane trap years ago, and I probably could have went and grabbed that. And if I wanted to, I could have got him in that. And without him escaping into the house, which would have been, you know, something that nobody would have wanted. But I just didn't take the time to do that. So the last I checked, he wasn't in any of the traps upstairs, but he's not in the wall. So maybe he went somewhere else. But it was fun to have that little bit of humor and joy. And then also I felt bad for what I was going to do to him if he got in the traps upstairs. So lesson for me.
Well, do you know what mouse medicine is?
I don't know. There's so many different things that say, you know, there's animal speak and all these other ones. What is it for you? What is your take on that?
Well, I follow the wisdom of the animal speak. I like Ted Andrews. You know, he transitioned. He's on the other side, too. I see him sitting here, kind of like his self here. But his wisdom is scrutinizing things, taking care of smaller details in life, you know? Kind of like if you think of that, like mm-hmm. if there's something you need to look at.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know? Yeah. But... you know, he was an amazing shaman.
I don't know that much about Ted Andrews. I just had the book, and I look at it every time I see a critter or something like that. I try to, because there's many different aspects that critter could represent, you know.
Yeah.
So any animal that comes in my yard. One thing I didn't tell you, too, this was really kind of, it shocked me, but we have this rabbit. I called him Roger. He was, we always got this great joy out of seeing him in the yard, and sometimes he'd be out there when we were out there. And we've had him go, you know, numbers of them come and go over the years, and we just leave them alone, and sometimes they'll be even comfortable with us being out in the yard. Well, a few months ago, yeah, I think this was probably back in maybe February, a couple months ago probably, Sandy says there's some kind of animal that's dead in our driveway, and we thought maybe we ran him over. So when I get home, it's Roger, and his guts are pulled out and laid by the side of him, and his top half is missing. And I thought, what animal would do that to begin with, you know?
Yeah.
It has to be like a bobcat or something like that. And then to leave the entrails right next to the side of them like that, you know? It just kind of, I know there's probably a message in all that as well. And I looked at rabbits, what Ted Andrews said about that. So, you know, it still was kind of a shock.
Oh, yeah. I love rabbits too. Yeah. And, you know, their medicine is new beginnings. When you said this, though, I kind of wondered if there was some predatory bird connected to it. I don't know, though.
That's a possibility, some people say, but I don't know how it ripped the top half. It, like, ripped off the legs and the head and left the rest.
That is weird.
It is. I thought it was like an alien abduction. Sandy even said that.
I know you were thinking that. I didn't say it, though. I don't, in my experience with the alien abductions, I haven't seen that kind of thing.
Well, the cattle mutilations, you know, this time it was a bunny mutilation. Yeah.
You're unbelievable. Now listen, listeners. He's teasing.
Yes, I am. Still was really weird, though, and I just wondered if there was something, some unseen other energy from another place that maybe did this. This is just not typical. I talked to the DNR, and they said, well, it's probably some kind of cat, because cats are very neat, and they'll pull things out and leave them. And
that's interesting.
And I thought,
I'd go with that, yeah.
But it can't be like a house cat, like a wild rogue cat. It's got to be like a bobcat. And I even thought about, we have cougars up here, but why wouldn't it just take the whole thing? Because they're not about to stay out in the open where I live, fairly close to the highway. They're going to, you know, and furthermore, did I startle him when I came out to go to work in the morning and he just took off with half of it and left the other half behind? I don't know. To me, it's a little bit of a mystery what happened to Roger. But, you know, it all is part of nature, I'm sure. You know, and it's meant to serve a purpose.
On a higher level.
Yep. And so it's meant, go ahead.
One thing that might help you and our listeners, like, I have a lady who, she rescues cats and she's all into the earth. She comes, you know, for coaching stuff. But, anyway, whenever she would see a dead animal, she'd feel like it was a catastrophe. And what came through for her was to remember that she's seeing the dead animal because she can direct its soul, if it died traumatically, to go to the Rainbow Bridge. So remember, if you see an animal who died traumatically, just bless its soul, and you're seeing it because you're the one who's meant to honor its soul journey.
That's really good. That's a really good point. And, you know, I see deer, and I my heart sinks a little bit on the side of the road. People hit him, and so my heart really sunk when I saw my little buddy there. And I don't remember if I said anything about that, but from now on, that's a good point.
Well, I'm glad it's going to be helpful because, you know, it's like, it is hard when you see them and you love them like that.
Well, I...
They go.
Well, yeah. I have no problem letting go. I think I can let go of anything. When you first see it, that moment, then it's like... But then within a short period of time, I understand everything has its own journey and we don't own anybody or anything. And we have to allow them to go on to their next, wherever they're going, whatever reason. We don't know the why, you know, behind it, you know. So maybe in a previous lifetime, Roger, like, stabbed a bird with his tail. I don't know. And so this was karma. I mean, I don't know. Just throwing
that
out. But,
you know, when there are things that are really hard to understand, I really feel that understanding there is karma is grace. I do. I like to say karma has kept me out of jail quite a few times, you know. I'm serious.
I bet you are.
Because it's taken a lot for me to evolve and get this calm.
Taken me a lot too. If you'd have known me when I was like in my teens or 20s, I was, especially early 20s, not the guy that I am now. And I'm so glad that I'm not. I'm so glad that I've become much more peaceful and don't feel the need to get involved in confrontations or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Let it go.
Yeah.
Be at peace. Be filled with love. I think it's always been there. When I was a kid, I was like that. And then as a teenager, you know what it's like to be a teenager. And so kind of go through those rebellious years. And then hopefully you come full circle to back. Do you believe when we're young children? I'm sure you do, but I'm going to ask you anyway. When we're young children, we're kind of closest to what we truly are?
You know, it's funny. I really didn't have what you call a conventional childhood. So, like your rebellious years and stuff like that, I didn't really express full rebellion until I hit my adult years. But there were certain things that even though it wasn't conventional, certain things I tapped into, like I loved to dance as a little girl. And as I grew up, I mean, dance freed me from a lot of things in my life. And even now, I recently made a choice not to use conventional healings. I reversed diabetes, fatty liver. I lost 30 pounds, and I did it by using food as medicine and dancing every day. So, you know, that was with me from my childhood. That was a biggie. And now I think about it, I wrote my first poem at 9, and it was about a past life as a soldier. And I remember that was my first time at writing, and it was just there. And I think it was because of that soul connection, too. Like you said, it's always in us. But as we grow, we have those patterns, those generational patterns, the imprint of society that we lay on top of it. And then, of course, we choose our lives and our lessons and the things. So we get away from it, you know, we do until we decide to really unravel the stuff.
So like if you look at a little child and the joy and the laughter and the playfulness, That's what I'm referring to. I remember that. I can remember back to being very young in those moments. There's many moments within my memory. And then somewhere along the way, you know, that can change, maybe as the burdens of the world come upon us. But then what the great thing about it, at least I feel for myself, is you can always return back to that. You can be child. That's why I'm kind of silly too, Joy. You say, oh, TJ, you do this. It's like, because I'm that child, that little child.
But see, that is something I did not get in my childhood. That's where that conventional childhood thing, even when I was dancing, everything about me was very intense. I mean, in all, there's only 3 photos of me in my childhood. And in each one, I was looking in the camera going, you've got to be kidding me.
Hmm.
Like, you could see there wasn't a kid in there until I hit my adult years.
So you had this attitude back then, you're saying.
Well, like I said, I mean, I came in talking to spirits and stuff, and that was more natural for me than dealing with people. I didn't really start connecting with people. Like, I loved them, but there was like this sense of disconnect with them. I have a book that one day I may get brave enough to publish. I had a teacher telling me to write this book. It took 13 years. It's written by me, 7 dead relatives, and the soul of a baby I almost had. And I'm leery of publishing it because it's a tell-all thing. I'll have to hide out.
Mm.
But
change your name.
Change
your name.
Well, you know, I might have to. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, Morgan Le Fay's book is out, and that's kind of hinting at things. But I don't have memories of laughing in my childhood. Nothing.
Wow.
You didn't know that?
I didn't know. You haven't really told me. I mean, we've talked a lot over the last number of years, but not too much about your childhood. I know you had some pretty negative things happen when you were younger. So I know that probably shaped you. But, you know, for me, I can remember back being 2 years old. And one of my oldest memories I have, and it's kind of funny, it tells you how ego is present even when you're first born, I think. You know it's there. And so my brother, we had these older, we grew up in a pretty humble household. It was an old barn made into a house, and my parents, you know, were very down to earth. They didn't buy all the gadgets and stuff, whatever. We still had a fairly nice place to live, but it was an old place. And we had hand-me-down stuff and used stuff, which was fine. But I had this playpen-type crib, which I wasn't real thrilled about. And I remember that at 2 years old. And I look over at my brother, and my parents had just bought him this new crib, stand-up crib. And his way to go to sleep was banging his head off the top of it. I don't know why he did that.
I used to do that.
And he would bang his head back and forth, and then he'd look over at me and he'd smile. And I knew, because we're connected, that he was rubbing it in my face. Ha ha, I got this new crib and you're in that. And I remember wailing. And we had these registers. We had these registers so the heat could come up from downstairs in each of the rooms. So there were registers in each room. And my mom would yell up to me, and she knew when something was wrong, she'd come up there. She'd say, now go to sleep. Come on now. She knew that it was nothing and that I was jealous. I don't know if she knew I was jealous, but it was like at 2 years old, I'm jealous of my brother because he's got a new crib and I wanted it. And he just, it was like the greatest thing. You should have seen the smile on his face from one ear to another. Just look at me. I'm banging my head on the top of the crib. And I think he was making the noise to get my attention so he could flash that smile in my face. But it's a fond memory as I look at it now, because, you know, I can remember also being filled with such love and such joy, simple little joy, from being a child and not having all the complications. And I remember when I was 3 years old and we went to our family reunion, which we didn't see very often, my father's side of the family. I had so much love for everybody I was introduced to, you know, and I remember my mom, even at one time when I would kind of want to go into places, she'd say, "Now you need to be a little careful sometimes, you know." So those are great. I guess I was fortunate to have those, but this also told me that when we come into these bodies, right after we get in them, we still have a lot of memory from where we came, and there's a lot of joy. And then as we continue to go down this path of physical bodies and living in these lives, then it's not always the it's not always this joy. We kind of lose sight of it. So too bad you didn't have that as a child. Maybe you did at a very, very young age.
But let me tell you, my experience, the things I remember, like my brother who made transition, he used to have this bookshelf in his room. And although I'm like the one who does readings and stuff like that, he was a hidden shaman in his own right. And I remember him introducing me without him knowing. I used to break in his room and read his books. And one of the books was Cahil Gibran's The Prophet. And in that book, I remembered a statement: the depth of your pain is the height of your joy. And I remembered reading that through some of the worst things in my teen years. And I took that and I held it. And I remember things like Cat Stevens. He wrote these very conscious raising songs. His music kept me alive. I remember things that were like these breadcrumbs that turned into whole loaves of consciousness that were somehow something I could hold on to. That when there was nothing around, there were these things, you know? And, so when I look at this life I chose with all the bumps and, you know, the lessons and the struggles and everything, it made perfect sense to me why I chose this life that most people have heard of that can't stand hearing about it. I actually know that everything was perfect to lead me to what I do, to what, how I'm living now, to understanding that the fifth dimension isn't someplace we're going to after having to move through hell, the heaven of 5D. When it's settled in, it's settled in me, you know? And it really helped me understand that that is the truest place to live from once we access it. But like I said, you know, I think the choice to live this life, to choose this life, really gave me every lesson I needed to get free, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, grace has a way of working when we're living a path that if we choose a life that's very arduous or, you know, very difficult, and we're living through really deep stuff, very often the grace is that there's some part of us that's lifted from the experiences. So we're not receiving the full magnitude of it or the effects of it until after the fact. And then the grace is following us into the light to receive the gift from it. It's an amazing thing.
We are just about, that's very nice that you shared all that, because I know, you know, we've kind of opened up and talked a lot of personal, but I think it's great. You know, we told stories about our lives and shared some of that. But I think we're just about, we're over an hour on this. So.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. So maybe you think we should wrap it up. Is there anything you
want more? Yeah, I think so.
Anything more you want to say?
No, I just keep wanting to just encourage people to remember that there's a light in every person, in every situation. And just from sharing today, and I'm sharing from a place of not reading about it, not reflecting. It's something I've had to strive to find and to live. So I'm coming from my heart with this really deep, and I really want to encourage people to remember the light and that love frees you to live the truth of what's real. And remember, if you're going to serve, if you want to get readings done, whatever it is, remember, there needs to be heart in the experience, in the learnings, in the lessons, and in the services you receive from people. You know, remember, please remember that. And remember, the light is in you, that you're part of the light, and that you can magnify that light to you at all times.